Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30 for 30 documentary each and every episode. I'm Ren with Nick and Sam. Guys, how's it going?
It's going well, Ren. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Nick, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. I just told you I wanted to tell you a quick story, and this is kind of a runner that we have going now, so bear with me. But so we actually are recording this a week delayed. This happened the day before we were going to record last week. So I was at the grocery store just walking down the aisle. I was in that aisle with like the Clif Bars and other breakfast foods. And I was just kind of going.
Like where this is going.
Usually, you know where this is going. Usually, I mean, I hate grocery shopping. I usually like just go there. And then once I get bored, then I just leave without everything I needed. But that night I was just like cruising. Like I was like, oh, get this. And I was just making my way through the store. So stop on like without even slowing down, just reached down, grabbed my peanut butter puff and cereal. But this whole time in this aisle, before I even got to the cereal, there was this other guy, normal, like my age, just standing there staring at the cereal aisle. And he was in there before I got in there, staring there. So I grabbed it, walked in front of him, walked by. But like, as I passed him, he's like, wait, is that good? He's like, and I was like, oh yeah. I was like, yeah, you got to get it. I was like, puffins are great. He's like, I've been standing here just like frozen. Like, he's like, I can't make a decision. and I was like, let me just tell you the way. And I explained the original puffins, the peanut butter ones that are the best probably. And he was like, all right, reached down and he grabbed them and walked separate ways. And I felt like I had done my good deed for the year.
You're the cereal angel in that grocery store that day.
Oh man, I'm just spreading the puffins gospel.
That's amazing. I'm inspired. I might go buy my first box of puffins.
Right, I gotta get a box.
Yeah.
So you're recommending the peanut butter ones?
Yeah, they're just more. I like both of them pretty equally, but they're more flavorful. The other ones are less flavorful. They're still good. I would just think it'd be easier to sell you on the peanut butter ones.
Okay. So for those fans out there, we have a bunch of new listeners. So for all those new listeners out there, puffins were Ren's favorite cereal growing up. And we talk about this. We talked about it in one of the earliest episodes, right?
Yeah, we have Mount Rushmore of, was it cereals?
It might have been. Yeah.
I think so.
And you guys were like shocked.
Rudy and I had never even heard of it, basically. And Ren was in love, and we've been joking about it ever since. And still have eaten them, and it's been like a year and a half.
So good. And I was like, oh, as soon as I walked away, I was like,
cinnamon too? They have a cinnamon kind as well.
I've never had that one. I'm not a big cinnamon flavor person. But yeah, I was like, I can't wait to tell this on the podcast. This is the purest content.
That's amazing.
All right. Anything else going on in sports, Nick? Any college basketball updates? We're in the conference tournaments right now. Anything you've been watching?
Yeah. So conference tournaments, the big conferences started today or yesterday, for the most part. So I watched a little bit of local action, I guess, but NDSU, SDSU in the Summit League Championship last night. That was a pretty good game that went down to the last minute, or, you know, basically the last couple of plays. So that was a entertaining game. South Dakota State went, they went undefeated in the regular season and then they won the tournament. So I forget if that was 19 games or what, but that was their first 30 win season, I believe. So so they could be a team to watch out for. I think I haven't looked at the bracketology in the last couple of days, or probably it was early last week that I did, but I thought they were being slotted for like a 12 seed or something. I could be wrong on that, but could be a tough matchup for whoever.
There's always like 3-12 seeds that win every year. So if they're the 12, I'm picking them for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, those 12s get a lot of love. Well, there was an upset. Wake beat or lost to Boston College. I guess I've been following some of the women's bracket too, just because I've been trying to track UConn and Paige Beckers to see if she comes and plays here when the Final Four is here for the women. They're like a little, like, I don't know, maybe like a week ahead as far as scheduling. But I think,
yeah, and then their championship is after, or it's the same weekend as the men's Final Four, but I think it's the
it's alternating days. Yeah, so I think the women's semifinals are Friday, and then men's are Saturday, women's final Sunday, and men's Monday.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Gophers are playing right now, Gopher basketball.
Yeah.
They got a great shot at the Big Ten tournament title.
I saw something where it was like, it was a four of the last 6 years, I think, we've played on the first week, or the first day first of the round, Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, they're the last seed. Yeah.
I'm going to the Gophers men's hockey game, Big Tens against Penn State on Saturday.
Nice. Yeah. That's who the basketball team playing.
Oh, really? Also, can we talk about, like, the biggest story of all time that nobody's talking about? The fact that Brittany Griner is being held in, like, a Russian prison for having marijuana during, like, the worst possible time to be in Russia ever.
Yeah, that's nuts. Like, she was, what, she was trying to get out after playing in the Russian Basketball League, and then just got detained, and now who knows what's happening.
Yeah, what a wild story that is. And I feel like nobody's really talking about it. But could you imagine if it was, you know, LeBron or something?
LeBron, yeah. And, like, it's very ominous when they do talk about it. It's like, and nobody's heard from her.
Yeah.
And this happened last month. So that's, and it's so like, confusing. Yeah, I don't know. It reminds me of that Chinese tennis star that like, after she claimed that one of the government officials sexually assaulted her, or, you know, whatever that was, that allegation, and then she, like, fell off the face of the earth for, like, you know, well, probably still, but they had to check on her whereabouts, make sure that she was still alive, and it's like, you know, just behind the Iron Curtain type of a deal.
Oh, yeah.
Did they ever find her, by the way?
Well, she made a couple, like, Zoom interviews, and then an appearance, like, at the Olympics, during the Olympics, to, like, show face, but no one knew if, like, she was still, like, free, basically.
Yeah.
Wow, that's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, so stay tuned for a Doc wish list.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But have you guys heard that, like, they're saying that they might have planted, like, there's some people that are claiming that they planted that on her?
Yeah. I mean, and it's not that far-fetched, but, I mean, I have no clue what actually happened. But I mean, like, she's, like, one of the best players. It's not like you could argue she's, like, one of the LeBrons of the WNBA. It's not like she's a role player. Like, she's a multi-all-star and everything.
Definitely.
It's like, if it wasn't planted and she was traveling with that, I mean, you got to be smarter than that, especially in Russia.
Yeah, true.
But definitely. I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Sam, we kind of skipped over the combine time. I know you are a psycho for that kind of thing. What's your takeaway?
It was a weird year as far as 40 times ago. They were reporting that pretty much every receiver ran, like, ridiculous times in, like, the 4.2s and the 4.3s. And it came out that they think the laser was slightly off.
Great.
Which is really fascinating, and I guess they had a different timer this year than they have for years past, so that definitely contributed. But yeah, some, like, amazing performances, and it's always funny to see how, like, things change, because Malik Willis, who's the top quarterback prospect, or one of them, from Liberty, has, like, skyrocketed up boards, and before they were saying he might be there for the Vikings at 12, but now they're, like, speculating he could go as early as number 2 to the Lions. So
really,
yeah, because, well, he's just, it's like perfect timing for him, because you've seen what Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen have turned into, which are just, like, the ultimate project quarterbacks with unbelievable talent, and that's basically exactly what he is. So they're, like, thinking the league is shifting towards, oh, we're gonna draft people like Mahomes or Allen or Justin Herbert because they have endless potential. And if they hit it, then you're golden for the next 10 to 15 years as a franchise. And if they miss, then you just draft a new one in 3 or 4 years. So he's just falling in right in line with those guys.
Yeah, I hadn't even really heard of him until a couple of months ago.
We have the smallest hands ever guy.
Oh, yeah, from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had 8.5-inch hands or whatever.
Pickett, which, I think his name is.
Kenny Pickett.
Kenny Pickett, yeah.
And that's smaller than Taysom Hill. I think Taysom Hill has the smallest hands in the NFL for quarterback.
Okay, that would make sense. Yeah, I mean, it's like 1/2-inch smaller than Joe Burrow's were, and Joe Burrow got a hard time.
He retired from football because of it, remember?
Yeah, right. I think Pickett is like a big glove guy. He's gonna wear gloves when he throws, just like Teddy Bridgewater does and stuff.
Weird. Teddy two gloves. Also, I heard a rumor that Teddy might be going to the Bucks.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we should get into all the quarterback carousel. Like, yeah, today Carson Wentz traded to the Commanders. Yesterday, Russell Wilson from Seattle to Denver, and obviously that was triggered by Aaron Rodgers signing another deal with the Packers. Nick, is this how you thought the NFL offseason would play out?
Kirk hasn't been traded yet, so I mean, it's a lot going on. I didn't think Russell Wilson would be traded, but I guess it makes sense the more that I think about it because, I mean, like the Seahawks are clearly the worst team in their division. And if they can get a
right, getting worse.
Yeah. And so if they can, do a rebuild and then, be good in, 2 years or something like that when everybody else might have already peaked. I mean, that could be perfect opportunity. So the more that I've thought about that and heard that arguments or that side of things has made me, kind of get on that side of things and say, why not? I mean, why not get 5, 6 draft picks, whatever it was, and they still got Noah Fant and, Drew Locke, but we'll see what that is.
The only thing that I'm sad about is, yeah, Seahawks could be like one of the worst teams in the league, but like DK Metcalf is going to be stuck on a horrible team unless they somehow trade him because he wants to be on a good team, but it sounds like he's going to have to stick it out until they're good. That's again. Good point. Sam, what'd you think about everything happening?
Definitely a very wild time. And I just can't help but to think about how like loaded the AFC is compared to the NFC. Like just think about the NFC. You lose Drew Brees, you lose Tom Brady, you lose
Russell Wilson.
Who else? They're just like very down in the dump. Stafford in the last year. So it's like all these quarterbacks.
Stafford's still in the NFC, but.
Oh yeah. Sorry. My bad. All these quarterbacks are just exiting and not really being replaced necessarily by great people. And then the AFC is just like Mahomes and Allen and Burrow.
Now Burrow's good. Yeah, they're either taking them from the NFC or they're sprouting up.
Right, exactly. Like Jameis disappeared out of the NFC. And like, yeah, it's just an absolute wild time. And just think about that division. Like you have Mahomes, you have Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, and Derek Carr is the worst quarterback in his division. And he's like arguably better than Kirk Cousins.
He's arguably better than half. Like he's in the top half of quarterbacks in the league, especially since now with like, I feel like there's going to be fewer and fewer good or like above average quarterbacks. Like, I mean, like so many guys are like turning not good. Like Carson Wentz is like, he was good 2 years ago. He was great 2 years ago. And now like there's not even like hot rookies coming out this year. I mean, right. You're talking about the guy, like he could go mid first round to be the first quarterback after what it's been the past few years. So it's weird.
Crazy.
I heard that the Seahawks might try to use all of those picks to get Deshaun Watson. Have you guys heard that?
I haven't, but.
Depending on, apparently Watson has a like a hearing or a grand jury or whatever on Friday, and so it's like dependent on that. But
jeez,
that's another thing, is like he's another one of the quarterbacks just in the NFL that's was one of the best 2 years ago, and obviously didn't play last year. Yeah, it's weird. Like, there's like a dearth of quarterback talent. At least, I mean, it's not true, but it just feels that way, you know?
For sure.
I mean, I said, I think I said like 10 episodes ago, maybe like 30 episodes ago, that like, yeah, Rodgers won't play that with the Packers next year. And like, that all completely went crazily in favor for Packers fans. And you're not, you don't usually think that that's how it's going to go.
That's very true. I was very on board with the fact that he was gone, but they must have won him back. And I mean, they seem fully committed. And I mean, he probably sees the same thing that I just talked about, the fact that the NFC is absolutely wide open and the AFC is loaded. Like, if he gets traded to Denver, he has to go against Mahomes every year, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, totally. Like, the NFC is like ripe for the picking. Like, with probably with Brady going, he's like, oh, this is like, this is now my domain.
Yeah, it's basically the Niners and the Rams and maybe the Cardinals. And
yeah, and the Niners will have a first-year quarterback probably, you know, like
yep.
The Cardinals have their tons of issues themselves. And
the Cowboys are decent, but like his divisions, the Vikings are going to probably be pretty bad, if they, especially if they try to rebuild. The Lions are the Lions, and the Bears, who knows? It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. Well, we should probably get into this this documentary. We didn't even said we're going to talk about. So let's start talking about Bad Boys, directed by Zach Levitt, about the Detroit Pistons of the, I guess, the 80s, early 90s. Isaiah Thomas, Rick Laimbeer, et al., and they're kind of, I don't know, just their, the documentary, I guess, to summarize it, was just about the kind of rise and the accomplishments of this era of Detroit Pistons basketball. It placed it in Detroit, as we all know, kind of a struggling a place in that time especially. And it talked about the persona that this group of guys created for themselves, being, you know, very physical in a time when there wasn't technical, wasn't flagrant fouls, and just a lot of things that went into them claiming to be the Raiders of the NBA, all the different characters, Dennis Rodman, you know, Isaiah Thomas, everything. I really enjoyed the part of just kind of describing and giving us a better insight into Isaiah Thomas's psyche, because you know, he's arguably one of the best players, you know, top whatever, in the NBA, in NBA history. And we don't often get to hear his side of the story. And this wove through almost 10 years, maybe over 10 years, describing their rivalry with the Celtics, Larry Bird, ultimately losing, and then ultimately beating them in the playoffs, them playing Magic in the Lakers, and then obviously Jordan and the Bulls for a few years in that rivalry, and how they ultimately beat them, then lost, and the infamous walk off the court before the game ended against the Bulls, and all the kind of controversy that went along with kind of their persona. And a pretty famous team in for NBA people. And that's kind of how it went down. It kind of talked to pretty much everyone involved, whether it was Michael Jordan and every single person on the team, Chuck Staley, I think his name was, the coach. So it was just it was 1 hour and 42 minutes. It was a long one. Sam, what was your initial thoughts?
I had a thought that I hadn't had in watching any of these 30 for 30s, and I just wanted to see what you guys thought of it. But almost immediately, I was maybe a few minutes in, and I just felt like this one was like a higher level, or it maybe had a higher budget than a lot of the 30 for 30s that we'd seen so far.
Yeah. I kind of had a similar thought. NBA Productions or something was one of the producers. And you could tell that because they had, you know, they had video and every video you could imagine, right, from whichever broadcast network was involved. So that was a big part of it. It helped a lot. And I thought there was another like producer that, I guess it was like ESPN Films also. So like there's that ESPN Films production tier that some of these longer ones fall under. And then there's also 30 for 30s, and sometimes those, you know, are in the same Venn diagram, sometimes they're not. But yeah, that probably added to the production.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it was very high quality. I didn't really think about the fact that they pulled any video that they wanted. There were some incredible highlights, incredible behind the scenes things that we got to see for the first time. And I've told you guys that over the last couple of years, I've really gotten into like more NBA history and stuff and just learning about it. And I've heard a lot about Isaiah Thomas and how, you know, he was looked down upon by his peers and like even to this day is very not well liked. And this was a good look into that, like you explained, and how once Michael Jordan finally beat them in the Eastern Conference Finals, he left the court early with his teammates, and how that just kind of got him like almost blackballed from NBA players, it seemed like, because it was that in the following summer that he wasn't allowed on the Dream Team, and that was covered in Michael Jordan's Last Dance documentary and all of that stuff. But it was really fun to see. They're clearly one of the best NBA teams ever that is rarely talked about, and they got overshadowed by Jordan almost immediately after their two-year run or championships. Jordan wins 6 of 8, so they're not really remembered as they should be probably, but it was really fun to see that. What do you think, Rudy?
Yeah, it made me wish that I was alive during that time. I feel like, I mean, you guys like the NBA more than I do, but I feel like that was probably the most fun time to be an NBA fan. I mean, just between like Bird and Magic, and then transitioning, like Bad Boys was kind of that transition into MJ. And so, like you said, after they were done, then MJ went for 6 of 8. So it was just like a fun time. I felt like it was, you know, a big battle every time. They talked about how physical the game was. That at one point in the documentary, they said that there weren't fines for hard play. It was for fights. And so I thought that was kind of funny because, I mean, nowadays, obviously, it's much different. But yeah, I thought it was very entertaining to get like a behind the scenes look. It reminded me a lot of The Last Dance, just looking at, you know, the Pistons instead of the Bulls. But I thought it was fun to get each player's perspective on things. I thought that the interviews were pretty good for the most part. And I overall just enjoyed it.
I really, just to go off what you said, I really did enjoy it. And I liked how they, I guess my experience and our experience of having watched The Last Dance, you could look forward to plot points that were going to happen, knowing how they intertwined and maybe not quite remembering, but then being reminded of them when they happened, obviously from the other side of it, usually with the Pistons and not the Bulls. And so I think that's part of why I was really like transfixed for an hour and 40 plus minutes, usually a long one, you know, you can fade in and out of paying attention. But I mean, I was like pretty interested and captivated because I think in large part because of that, because I might have known some of the controversies that were going to come, and then when they did happen, it was more of a payoff because of The Last Dance. And so this obviously being produced well before The Last Dance was, but I hadn't seen it. I saw it in this order. So I think that played a big role in how much I like this. One of the themes that they kept going to in this documentary that I really liked was the kind of coastal elites, and then the Pistons being the Mavericks, you know, within that, the Larry Birds on the East Coast, just kind of ruling that conference, and then Magic and the Lakers on the other side of the country. And then the Pistons kind of the disruptors, I guess, and how that was like this cool like era of NBA, right, where we had these two legends, these two teams that are arguably like top whatever, the greatest of all time. And it was just this cool like theme that they mentioned many times, and maybe that was part of why the Pistons ultimately became like the you know, have this inferiority complex, if you want to call it that, or, you know, like little brother complex, Did you notice that, Sam, like the themes and how that kind of worked out? And like, what did you think of how the Bad Boys persona was developed and should it have been developed? And why did they kind of take it on?
Yeah, I feel like they almost had to take it on. Maybe it was one of those things where they weren't going to get much attention unless they, you know, eventually took down the Larry Birds and the Magic Johnsons. And I feel like the only way they could do it is not through finesse, because Larry Bird and Magic Johnson were like the kings of that and kings of having skill and stuff. So they just had to show up and like punch him in the mouth, basically. And I mean that from like a basketball sense, but also from they got in a lot of fights and got fined a lot sense. But yeah, it was really fun to see that. And I didn't really think about it, but as you were talking, I just started thinking, this kind of reminds me a lot of the Pistons teams that we saw when we were kids. And if you think about the similarities, like they were really well known for like, they were rough and tough. And like, you know, the Malice at the Palace happened with a Pistons team, and they had the Wallace brothers, and like Rasheed Wallace kind of reminds me a little bit of Dennis Rodman, and Chauncey Billups was their Isaiah Thomas, and they took down the Lakers, who were, you know, the best team in the sport, and they ended up beating Kobe and Shaq. And I don't know, what do you guys think of that comparison?
Well, I think they always wanted, I mean, like the fans definitely wanted to continue that persona, right? And so I'm sure they played into it. And I guess I didn't really watch enough to know. But yeah, like I think that was kind of the idea, right? Is they were the next edition of the Bad Boys.
Sure, Bad Boys 2.0.
The city kind of fits the city and just the blue collar, you know, aspect of that.
I loved how their owner was interviewed in this documentary, and he's this guy. I mean, he looks like this like stuffed shirt guy, and he's like, "Yeah, we're a really blue collar, you know, atmosphere." And this is this old white guy with a, you know, suit on, and he does not look the part at all. And he's just like, he seems really like prim and proper. And he's like, "Yeah, this is our persona, and this is what the Detroit needs." I was like, "Okay, dude, chill." yeah. What else? I guess I want to talk more about just what, we don't have to get into like the morality police, but what do we think of like Isaiah Thomas, his choices, were they justified? Were they not? I guess I'll just give my spiel first of all, is that I think Isaiah Thomas is, well, first, it's obvious that he's like super loyal to his teammates, and that played itself out many times, and maybe to a fault, you know, when he like repeated what Rodman said about Bird, you know, or other things like that. But I almost think it goes really far with that. Like he accepted the Bill Laimbeer. Wait, is it Bill Laimbeer? What's his first name? Yeah, Bill Laimbeer. His whole vibe, persona, and outlook that, you know, Laimbeer was this like bullying guy on the court who would, you know, play mind games and be super physical. And so he kind of just took that on, claimed it as his own, defended it as his own, and they became the Bad Boys. And to a certain extent, he did himself a disservice, I feel like, because he had the talent of, you know, of one of the best players in the world, but he got known as just the gimmicky guy or whatever, and also no one liked him. And so like he did himself a disservice by not being popular to like the larger NBA, whatever. Didn't get to go to the Olympics because he, you know, did this classist move along with the rest of the team that was Laimbeer's idea. And I feel like there's so many different occasions where he could have been like a bigger, more, at least more popular star if he had been just found himself on a different team, been drafted by a different team and, you know, made his way that way. He might not have won as many championships or been as successful. He might have been more so. I don't know. I just feel like it was his fault, but it also wasn't completely, because he was in this one area. He also made choices to make it turn out like it did. Obviously, you know, he's super successful, so he can, you know, decide if that's what he wanted or not. But I just feel like it's a weird situation, and that's part of the reason why And what do you guys think about this? Like, that why he's like, you know, forgotten, if you want to call it that.
So, yeah, I completely agree. I think he has, like, just based on what I've heard, and you can see it in this documentary, like, he has a huge ego. And, I mean, deservedly so. He's one of the probably best 20 players or something of all time. But he's almost like unwilling to admit even when he's clearly wrong. Like at the end, he kind of does, but it takes him a long time to get there, right? And one of the really interesting-
This is how he was as well, like in the press conferences way back with Larry Bird. And you know, they talked about that with just digging himself a hole. So it's like that hasn't changed over the years.
Oh, absolutely. And I was just going to bring up that Larry Bird part where after the Pistons lose to the Celtics, Dennis Rodman says that if Larry Bird was black, he would be just another player, basically. And then Isaiah Thomas goes on to basically agree with Dennis Rodman. And then it became such a big thing, like worldwide, or at least around the country, that they had to have a press conference where they came together and talked about it. And like, what a wild time that would have been.
Yeah, like it was during the NBA finals or right before or something. Celtics were in it and then the Pistons weren't. He was just like came in there and yeah, had this press conference and
brutal press conference too. Like he wouldn't admit to anything. He was kind of like, I was just telling a joke. I'm like a funny guy.
Yeah, it was weird. And then he kept having to answer questions about it because he never resolved it. I don't know. What do we think of Bill Laimbeer, I guess? I mean, I feel like if without him, there would be no Bad Boys. And for better or for worse, I don't know, Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a ringleader, right? Like he was, you know, the bad boy that kind of set everything off on that note. And I mean, he liked playing the mind games. He, as he says on the doc, he wasn't going to be the best player on the court, but he could outthink others or get under their skin and kind of win that way. Or when he played the best players, they weren't going to play at their best and try to level the playing field. So, I mean, one of those guys that's, you know, you love him if he's on your team and then you just like everybody else hates him.
Yeah, I feel like he's easy to loathe. I mean, he's just, yeah, I mean, you could respect it a little bit, you know, because he was so good at it. But ultimately, it's just so lame. Just like he was so unlikable. And also his interviews were fine, but you made me kind of dislike him a little bit more too.
Yeah.
They won. Remember at the end when he just kept saying they won? Jordan and stuff. They won. Well, how does it feel? What'd they do different this time? They won. Over and over.
Yeah, I don't know.
Back to the Isaiah Thomas thing. I think this documentary, when you talked about like his loyalty and then when they showed him as a player and just the, you know, his upbringing and how he basically just turned the Detroit Pistons into like a contender year after year after year. Like I respect that so much. And I liked him a lot more for those reasons after watching this doc. But then like, I feel like his personality is just somebody who all of those things are going for him, but he just like keeps biting himself in the butt over and over.
I know. And it's almost like you like him a lot more and you dislike him a lot more too.
Yeah, exactly. Like as a player, you love him and his story, you love him and his loyalty, you love him as a teammate and stuff. But then as like a person, as like an interviewer or you just almost despise him or you're like, I feel kind of like weird around.
Yeah, it's also weird because he seems as a person, he seems really smart and like he thinks ahead and he thinks about what he does. He's very heady. And yet he allows his like stubbornness or whatever it is to keep biting himself. And he seems, and even one of the like reporters that they interviewed, he was like, he was, you know, like they were talking about the comment that Rodman made. Rodman was this, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but he was no, what?
Wild card,
maybe? Yeah, and like he didn't really know what he was saying, but they were like, but Isaiah Thomas knew what he was saying. Like, this guy is smart. He's well spoken, and then he does all this stuff that like kind of is like conflicting with the kind of perception that you get sometimes. Like, you think he's smart, but then he does all this dumb stuff. Like, he walks off the court before they lose to the Bulls, and it doesn't really seem like something he'd do, but he kind of just takes on, like, my thing is, it seems like he basically follows this leader of the team, even though he's supposed to be the leader of the team. He follows Bill Laimbeer's bad example, and then he has to stick up for it even more than the bad example does, because he's the best player. That's kind of my impression.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with you, what you were saying, as far as like, it seems like he's very purposeful with what he does. And then all of a sudden he'll have a slip up where it's like, what were you thinking? Or like, how is this the same person? Or like, what's going on? Yeah, I feel like he at least, you know, allowed Laimbeer to continue to just be Laimbeer and just, you know, figure out for himself. When I was watching it, he reminded me of like Carl Lewis from the 30 for 30 doc. That was about him and the Canadian sprinter who I'm forgetting the name of. Like, very charismatic, but kind of shady at times too. Yeah. And he wasn't going to say that he did anything wrong. I mean, even when he agreed with Rodman, he's like, I never said that. It wasn't my statement. And it's like, well, he repeated it. So I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know. I just like, it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way on some of his interviews and stuff like that. And it just reminded me of Carl Lewis.
That's a really good comparison, actually, now that you say that.
It's almost like he's smart enough to have more integrity, or it seems like he's intelligent enough to not be dumb. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I think a word you said, I think stubborn is a good word, Ren.
To admit. And something that I learned from this that everyone knows is that he's from Chicago, and so quickly after he'd become a star, then Chicago hated him. Yeah, they talked about his rookie season when he went to Chicago, and everyone was cheering for him. They loved him. He's their favorite son. But then quickly MJ replaced him, and then he was hated. And it's just this kind of unfortunate way things went down, which I hadn't known. Anything else? I really like the Aguirre and Dantley storyline, where Mark Aguirre was brought in after they traded away Dantley, who was an older guy, former star in the league. I thought that storyline was just surprisingly refreshing. It was like, oh, this is a really cool, like, little, you know, C plot that was entertaining and added to this. And it was just a reason that this had kept moving along. They had these good stories.
Usually in these hour and 40 minute ones, it's those little stories that at the end, when we're reviewing it, we're like, why was that in there? We don't need it. It should have been 50 minutes or an hour. And I completely agree. I thought that was a great story and one worth telling.
Exactly. Yeah. They interviewed MJ. I thought, just we're talking about production wise, I thought the interviews were great. They, you know, they got all the guys, which they couldn't have done it if they didn't have the main characters, but they got all of them. What else? Anything else before we get to a rating?
I don't think so.
Okay. Who wants to go? Nick, what do you think? Rating.
Yeah, I can go. Like I said, I really like this one. I think Sam hit it on the head where it's like, this one seemed like it had more production value. It was just kind of like right from the start, you were like, all right, this is going to be a good one. I felt like it, you know, captured the team well. It, you know, had a good build up where it covered the team before they were the bad boys, or kind of as they were gaining their identity. Kind of like the Last Dance, where like MJ had to, you know, get over that hurdle. And so they had to get over, you know, Magic and Bird. And that was fun to see that, I guess that adventure, that challenge that they had to do, and how they didn't make it on the first time, and you know, led for more drama and a better storyline and everything like that. So I'm going to go with an 8.6 abandoned buildings, because all the interviews with all the players was in this random abandoned building, kind of set the scene.
Nice.
Who wants to go next?
Ren, you go.
I'll go. I'm in the eights as well, not quite as high. I gave it 8.13 double air balls, because there's that one time when Dennis Rodman, I think, he just airballed two free throws back to back. And that was a bad look. But 8.13, because of all the reasons I said I really liked it. I was listening to a podcast. It was Smartless with Jason Bateman. And anyway, they were interviewing a few weeks ago Michael Moore, who's a famous documentarian. And he was saying, like, he's like, I make movies, and I never want to just be approach things as I'm just making a documentary. You know, you're supposed to try to make a movie from a point of view, or you know, tell a story. And it doesn't mean you're providing the facts or fictionalizing anything. You're just making an entertaining movie, whatever. But I just thought this one just felt kind of, as you're watching it, just like a long movie. And more than like sometimes documentaries can feel really, you know, like you're just getting the info and the video, and you know, it's just not as well done when that happens. So yeah, I just thought it was put together really well. This fits in the category for me of something that I should have known a lot more about that I didn't, and now I do. So yeah, I think I can, you know, hold a conversation about it now more than I could have, than maybe I should have before. Yeah, I really liked it. Sam, what about you?
And that's the whole point of this podcast that we came up with, right? Is just to learn more and be able to become smarter sports fans, I guess.
Exactly.
So yeah, I completely agree. With both of you, I thought it was really great. Learned a ton about a team that we should have known more about, and that, you know, we've heard mentioned but really didn't know the story about. Learned why Isaiah Thomas is who he is, which was interesting. And then, production. We didn't really mention this. The only, and I don't necessarily mind it or hate it, but it was a very interesting choice in their production value, where they just had like, not like still images, but it was basically like slow-mo videos of players doing like random things during their interviews or right around their interviews, you know, where it's like Isaiah Thomas, for instance, I'm just making this up, but like he's like in the background and then like a garage door like is closing on him, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and like they were like, hey, can we just shoot you standing and doing something?
Yeah,
they had Sally like do a little dance move, right?
Yeah, and they had like a player just like knock bricks together, and they did that in like slow-mo, and they did that over and over and over again. And I think in a lot of instances that would have been like a big no-no, especially from you, Ren. But for some reason it was fine, and they like, the interviews were good enough where you weren't really like, this is really awkward or weird, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the goal of it probably is to show these guys' personalities and let us, you know, get invested in these personalities, you know, early on. And sure. and like, you know, so they had the class clown guy who liked to party, Sally, he was like dancing, and then Mahorn was the guy with the bricks. He was like this big intimidating guy, and he was like breaking bricks in his hands. And so like, yeah, I thought it was helpful. I did, when I watched it, it did take me out of it a little bit, especially with some of the guys just standing there, because I was like, oh, they definitely just asked them to do something, and they just, you know, or they directed them to do this. But I mean, like, for example, like the bricks one, they had Mahorn do it at the very beginning, and the very end, he was like dropped them. And so like thematically, I appreciated like that part of it. And yeah, it did work. It worked for what they wanted to do. I wouldn't have done it, but they did it well, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. I was shocked that we got to the end here, and then we hadn't mentioned it yet. Cause it was like definitely a big part of the production, I feel like. So with that all being said, I'm going to give this one an 8.53 snapped Achilles, because I learned something new, that Isaiah Thomas, his career ended at 33, I think they said, because he snapped his Achilles and just was never the same and didn't have that same desire to get back on the court. So very interesting.
Cut short, yeah.
Yeah. So it's 33 these days is nothing, but back then it was a little bit more. Our average for this is 8.42. This is one of the highest rated ones we've ever had. In fact, it is number eight on our list, right behind The Prices of Gold, which we just watched, and then right ahead of June
17th, 1994. Top eight. Wow. Yeah, we've had some good ones lately. Yep,
we were due. We had some middle of the line ones for a while. So
yeah, very good. Awesome. Let's go right quickly into our Mount Rushmore now. We're going a little bit long, so we'll get right to it. Minor inconveniences is our theme of the Mount Rushmore. You know, little things that happen in your life that are minor, but they're annoying. Sam, do you know the order? I can look it up here real quick.
Yeah, I am first, Rudy okay. Second, and you are third, Ren.
All right, let's go.
All right, with the first overall pick, I am going to take, I just explained this when I was explaining what this Mount Rushmore is, but when you get a rock, you tie your shoes and you stand up and you're ready to go do whatever you're going to do, whether it's work out or go to work or whatever it is, and you feel a little, tiny little rock in your shoe or in your sock, and you just, it's like a 1 minute fix. It's not a big deal at all, but it's just that little annoyance that you have to stop and untie your shoe and get that rock out of there.
And if the rock's small enough, for me at least, you consider not doing it. You're like, oh, maybe I'll totally. Just leave it.
or maybe like try to shift it so that it's like not directly under your foot anymore. It's like on the side.
I'm a big shifting guy.
It's hilarious.
Oh, that's a good one. I am gonna go with when you're at work and you microwave food. And at my work, the microwave is in the same room, but there's people in line. And so then you think you have it microwaved enough and then you either like check there and then it's like, you know, do you inconvenience everybody else by putting it back in there? Or if you get back to your desk and then it's still cold on the inside or lukewarm, then it's all right. Do I have to walk all the way back to the microwave to re-microwave it or not?
That's great. What do you do though? Like, what are your choices?
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on the food, right? And then just how much time I have, I guess. But traditionally I would go back and microwave it.
Or you just address it right away and you're like, screw it. I'm just going to microwave everything for 3 minutes.
But then you risk it exploding or something in the communal microwave.
Right, but at least it's hot then, you know?
Yeah, I've done the eat partially cold food before, which is pretty on-brand.
Hannah's like famous for that. I give her a hard time because she'll like warm up stuff and it's like lukewarm. But like, and I always get mad about it because I'm very much like, I want it to be hot when it comes out of the microwave.
Yeah. Okay, wait, my turn? Yeah, my turn. Mine is like when you're like, for example, like today was my off day, so like I went grocery shopping and stuff. Mine is when you're not able to bring everything in the car and out from the car in one load. I mean, yeah. Generally with groceries you can, but not if you've gone like multiple different places. Like I've like done snowboarding and then gone grocery shopping, and then I have to make a decision which one I'm going to leave in there. And it's just terrible. And then you're like, okay, do I just leave the board in there because I don't want to go back and get it until next time? And yeah, so not being able to bring in everything from the car.
That's a really good one.
And it doesn't matter like how far that is from your, like, yeah. Are you in an apartment or are you in a house or, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
It's a real hard decision you have to make. Okay, next is just a minor inconvenience that I feel like I run into, probably because I don't have a like as fully stocked of a kitchen as I should, but like when all the spoons are dirty and I'm like, I just want a bowl of puffins or whatever. And I'm like, I just, it's so easy to wash a spoon, obviously, but I'm just like, ugh. And then a lot of times I'll eat something else that doesn't need a spoon. So
that's a little fair.
Number two, I'm going to go with when I do laundry and I'll fold my laundry, but then I don't put it away. And so it's, I'll just put it on my bed. And then I'll just leave it there. And then when I'm really tired at night and I just want to go to bed, and then I get back to my room and I'm like, oh shoot.
You immediately regret your decision from earlier.
I do the same thing.
That is a really good one. Okay. So I'm next. I'm going to go with a simple one. When you just don't have cash and you need cash for whatever reason it is, but it's not, you know, it's like there's no ATM around or whatever. And you're like, oh, I need to tip this person for something, or somebody asks you if you have cash and you're like, nope, sorry. And I like rarely have cash. So this happens to me often.
Yeah. Same. Like I just drove. Yeah. I was at the gas station. There was a food truck there and they said cash only. And I was like, do people still do like require cash only, especially for a food truck? I feel like that it's not great, but yeah, I rarely have cash either.
The next one is going to be when the Wi-Fi is acting up, like Ren has trouble with sometimes. We all have had it at some point during this podcast, but it's, what do you think about the fact that like, oh, this wireless internet's not working. This sucks. In reality, it's like such a minor problem because we have data and we can just turn Wi-Fi off and nothing in our life changes, but it's so frustrating, especially if you're paying for it.
This was on my list too. Yep. And you think about like when you're growing up and you had to dial into AOL or whatever, and how that took like forever.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine is sort of similar, but not really. Having to log into the streaming service.
With me.
Oh, it's you.
Yeah.
I won't take yours.
Don't take mine.
But when I'm logging into Netflix. I'm going to go with when I'm in a rush to work, and like, which is usually what my commute is, even though it's the smallest commute in the world, but in the traffic lights, you know, are not all green just for you. So you can't, like, something stops you from getting to work at like at the most optimal time, whether that's, you know, another car at a stop sign as well, or someone like crossing the street, or there's lights on the road, or
yeah, that's a good one. You get irrational. I get irrationally mad when something like there, like this morning, I think, yeah, there was someone that just stopped at a stop sign and didn't, they like forgot to look up. Okay, now my turn. Mine is going to be having to log into streaming services again. So like, for example, whenever I log into like the Golf Channel app, the NBC Sports app, it doesn't remember my like cable information, and it's like such a hassle, but it's also really not, but it feels like so annoying.
I've avoided the DirecTV streaming app on my phone for like 2 weeks because I didn't want to log in again, because I'm like, I don't remember what email it is and I don't want to take the time to figure it out.
God, it's such a hassle.
Such a better thing. It would take 2 minutes, but
I know. And then my last one is like getting into bed and then forgetting like you wanted to go pee, or you wanted like a drink of water, and you're like all comfy in bed.
That's a good one. And then you have the debate of like, do I get up and do it?
Can I fall asleep without it or no?
Yeah.
All right. Last one for me. I'm going to say, when you go to the bathroom, you run out of toilet paper on toilet paper roll, and then you have to restock it, but then you have to like undo, you know, like the sticky part of like the roll. You have to like restart your roll. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have to do that part, and you're just trying to go to the bathroom, and you know, you're just trying to do your business and get out of there. And now it turned into a, like, can I, you know, tear one, you know, piece of that toilet paper and not like four pieces, and you know.
It turns into a craft project.
Right.
You're just trying to take a number two and doing arts and crafts.
Or like the roll is like too tight, or like the roll of toilet paper is too big, and wherever you're pulling it from is like makes it too tight so that like you're pulling it, but you're only getting like one tiny little strand.
One at a time. Yep.
All right. Wow, you guys took a lot of mine. How about when you lock the door and then you remember something that you left inside?
Oh yeah,
that's always a.
You do that a lot. I feel like I do every single one of these in my life. They revolve around.
All right, I'll go through this quick. Much more of minor inconveniences. I went with when there's a rock in your shoe, you have no cash, your Wi-Fi is acting up, or you lock the door and need to go back in. Rudy went with the microwave, time debate, whether to do it again or not. Leaving folded laundry on the bed. Delayed commutes for whatever reason it might be. And toilet paper troubles is how I summarize that one. Ren went with multiple trips with bags from stores. All the spoons are dirty, so you eat something different. You log into streaming services again. That's always frustrating. And then having to get out of bed for whatever reason.
Nice. Classic Doc Diehards Mount Rushmore category.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, quickly, we're going to get to our last segment. I'll go for Doc Wish Lists, a future documentary that we'd like made. In honor of the, we're recording here on Wednesday in March, Boys Hockey State Tournament just started today. It's a tradition in Minnesota, and I feel like there probably has been, but there hasn't really been a full-blown documentary on the spectacle, the tradition, the history, and the talent and the competition that takes place here. You know, at the Xcel Energy Center, boys hockey, two classes, packed, you know, Xcel, like, I think the most people that have ever been in the Xcel Energy Center for a sports game was some semifinal a long time ago. It's just so cool, and it started again today, so that's my pick for Doc Wish Lists.
That was amazing. That was the last event that Rudy and I went to before the world shut down.
Oh, dang, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
All right, I got the next episode pulled up, folks. We are on episode 62. It's called Slaying the Badger from July of 2014. It's an examination of the competitive nature that teammates Greg LeMond and Bernard Hinault exhibited in the 1986 Tour de France.
Oh.
A film based on Richard Moore's book of the same name. Okay. Based on a book, might be a first.
Yeah, for a documentary to be based on a book is... very good. This was fun, guys. We'll get out of here on that. Thanks for listening.